Welcome back to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson here with Lou Ann Crane, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
And Ryan, I am so excited to dive into our program today. I just think it's a much needed conversation when so many of our listeners are in this new stage of life, starting a family, which we will be discussing in just a few minutes.
I agree, Lou Ann. And I want to encourage our listeners to get caught up on this discussion at drjamesdobson.org. I promise you will not be disappointed. Mm-hmm. Now, Dad, we're here to continue this broadcast that we only started last time. So tell us where we're going to go today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we must do another program because we're talking to a lot of mothers-to-be, and we're talking a lot of new mothers who might like to have additional children, and we're talking to grandmothers and maybe some grandfathers about the whole process of producing a baby, of being pregnant. And we have a guest here again today, Erin McPherson, who knows what she's talking about. She's got three kids of her own, and she's got four books of her own on this general subject. The one that's just coming out was published by Guidepost some time ago, I think in 2011, wasn't it? And now it is being republished by Thomas Nelson. And the title of it is The Christian Mama's Guide to Having a Baby. It's loaded with practical information.
Yes, it is.
I mean, such things as what to pack when you go to the hospital or what equipment you want to have when you're about to have a baby. I mean, just very practical things about food and nutrition. And there's just so much information here that new mothers can use. And so we're going to talk about that subject again today. Erin is a speaker. She writes and speaks. She speaks into the lives of young moms through her blog and other writings. What is the blog?
ChristianMamasGuide.com.
That figures. And, she has written these four books, and maybe I ought to name them very quickly because a lot of our listeners will have kids in these age groups. So we have A Christian Mama's Guide to the Grade School Years, A Christian Mama's Guide to Parenting a Toddler.
Which has, I think, a plate of something dumped on her head on the cover of that.
Yeah.
So that sums up toddlerhood.
It does, doesn't it?
She looks a little forlorn, doesn't she? And A Christian Mama's Guide to Baby's First Year. Are you writing more?
I would love to, but I just finished these, so we're going to take a little bit of time to
rest.
Plus,
a
I'm kind
you
of aging
them in
out.
How long?
I wrote those books in 4 months.
Yeah.
It was a very tight deadline. But I'm kind of aging
all
out.
All four.
Yeah. But the grade school years, my oldest is a first grader, and that one's about starting kindergarten, first grade. So he's got to get a little older before I can write about teenagers. I have to have a little experience. Mm.
Do you know how quickly those years are going to pass?
Mm-hmm. I'm starting to get an idea. I feel like my youngest is almost two, and I feel like he was just born. Mm. And I'm getting teary just thinking about it. I left him home with his dad so I could come up here this time. And I can't even believe he's old enough for that.
Wow.
Tell me about the morning that you took your first child out to get on the bus and go to school.
You know, I didn't take him on the bus because we don't have a bus in our neighborhood. But I had gotten a note from the school about a week before. And the note had said, we don't want a whole bunch of parents swarming the cafeteria. So you can drive up and you can drop your kid off and he can walk in. It was about 10 steps. And his teacher will be waiting right inside with a flag and he'll go to them and take them to his classroom. I was panicked about this. Mm-hmm. I was like, what if he trips on something? What if a fifth grader bullies him? He is not old enough to walk into that school by himself. And we practiced. I know that's horrible, but like I took him to the school and I was like, I'm going to pull up and you're going to get out and you're going to walk to the door and pretend you see your teacher.
Was he scared?
No, not at all.
Yeah, he was fine.
He was like,
the practicing
come on,
her.
Mom.
Yeah.
But I dropped him off, and he walked in with a big grin on his face, and I pulled out of the parking lot, and I could not even drive. I pulled over, and I sobbed. And my two other kids were in the back seat, and my daughter said, why are you crying? And I was just like, I don't even know. But
you know, there is an ad out now on television, and I wish I could let our listeners see it because it is one of the best I've ever seen. And I don't even remember what company was advertising, but it's a dad holding the hand of his little girl on the first day. and they're waiting at the bus stop. And the bus pulls up and stops. And the little girl is fearful. You can see it. She looks back over her shoulder at her dad. She's about to cry. And he is too. And he lets go of her hand, and she goes and gets on to the bus, and then it drives off. He jumps in the car and catches up with him. And he's driving along beside. And she doesn't see him, but she is having fun with the other kids, and she's laughing uproariously. And he realizes she's going to be okay. Mm. It's really a precious moment, but it will come so quickly.
I know it does. Pregnancy, and then you send them up to kindergarten, and I can't even imagine experience going beyond that. And yeah. Wow.
Isn't that an unexpected feeling, too? You think, oh, they're going to go to school. Of course I know they're going to go to school. And then you get all of those feelings just bombarding you.
It's because you know that this kid is tender and vulnerable and not really ready to deal with the pressures of her classmates.
I agree.
You know, it's that you worry about you're not being there to intercede or to help or to hold her if she cries or if she gets hurt or if somebody does bully her. This will show my biases, but it's why I believe in homeschooling, to give the child a little more time to be able to cope with the society that is represented by other children in the school.
I know that. I agree. And interestingly, my parents run a homeschool co-op school. My mom's the principal and my dad's the assistant principal. And I knew I wanted to send my kids to this school because it's 3 days a week homeschool and 2 days a week at the private Christian school. And I did not feel a peace about it. Mm-hmm. And I battled with God. I was like, I want them to go to this school. I want to homeschool them. I want to be with them. And he showed me that it wasn't the right place. And it was hard for me to make the decision to send my kids to public school because I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to let them go. But I think it was the choice he wanted for my family. Mm-hmm. And it has worked.
Well, we talked in yesterday's program about the first trimester, the first 3 months. And morning sickness and all that goes with it, and the emotions of beginning to understand that you're going to have a baby. Let's talk about the second trimester. What changes in those 3 months?
Well, for a lot of women, and I think anybody in their first trimester is counting down the days, you start to feel better. You start to get your energy back. You start to get a little bit of a belly, all sorts of fun things. But I do want to point out that for a lot of women, it doesn't happen right away, which can be very discouraging. But at some point during your second trimester, you're going to start feeling hopefully a little bit better. And that's when, for me, pregnancy really started to I really started to internalize it and get excited about it. I could feel the baby kicking and I could see the baby growing. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. Something cool is happening here.
It's kind of the springtime of the experience, isn't it?
It is.
Typically. Yeah. I'm almost reluctant to bring this up, Erin, because I don't want to create anxieties for pregnant women because there are enough of those, without creating new ones. But the fear of a miscarriage is always there if you know anything about pregnancy. You worried about that and you lost a baby, didn't you?
I did. There is a big fear of miscarriage. And I think I had two healthy pregnancies before I had a miscarriage. And so I think it kind of went off my radar. But I think you're right. It's one of those things that you don't want to worry about, but it is a common thing. My situation, I got pregnant and I went in at 8 weeks to have the baby checked just with an ultrasound. And immediately the doctor knew there was something wrong with the baby. And I heard words like incompatible with life and not going to survive. And
is that the way you were told?
I was told that.
You overheard it?
No, she told me. My doctor told me. And I was fortunate. My doctor said a lot of doctors would recommend an abortion here, but I'm not going to do that because I don't believe in abortion, which I was very pleased with.
Yes.
And I was thrilled. But I went home and I said, this is going to be my miracle. This is going to we are going to pray and this baby is going to survive. And I prayed for weeks. My friends came and I prayed and I thought about it. And I did end up losing that baby at about 16 weeks. And it was really hard. It was one of those situations where I sat on the bathroom floor crying for probably 2 days. How could God have purposed this? I wanted this baby so badly. And how could this have happened? And even now, several years later, I don't know why it happened. But I have learned that God has a purpose for every single life. And I know that there was a purpose in that life. And I probably won't find out until I get to heaven. But
speak to the people out there who say unthoughtful things to a mother who's just lost a baby through a miscarriage. Fortunately, you're healthy. You can have another child.
You'll get pregnant again.
You'll get pregnant again. But
we heard, well, at least you can get pregnant.
Oh.
Yeah, almost resentfully that they perhaps can't, and saying, who are you to complain? Yep. But that doesn't help.
It doesn't help. And I think it's just important to realize that, like, every single life God has created for a purpose and a unique life, and every single one of those babies was created and conceived and special and important. And I know that that fourth baby of mine is in heaven right now, but I also know that God had a purpose for that, and I don't know what it is. But
Aaron, Ryan brings up a good point. I mean, people do say hurtful things.
They do.
And typically when you're pregnant, your peers are all in that same age group. And I have not experienced miscarriage that I know of. I do understand that there are many times that you really, you know. And I understand the pain and the angst. But when I was pregnant, I was around my friends who had miscarried. And I knew that just me showing up pregnant when I was carrying the very thing they desired would cause them great pain. And yet you can't deny the fact that the Lord has given us a baby. Help us walk through that balance of standing there obviously pregnant but aching with a dear friend who is not.
I've had that with my sister-in-law. She had a miscarriage while I was pregnant. And it's hard. I don't even know what to say at times. But I think the really important thing is, like I said earlier, these are unique situations, and you can be joyful for my pregnancy and devastated for your loss. And it's okay to have two emotions at once. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to not separate them and think pregnancy is pregnancy.
Ryan, Laura lost four babies to miscarriage.
Yep.
And when suddenly she was pregnant and it appeared to be with a healthy child, mm-hmm. What were your emotions and what were her emotions at that time?
With our pregnancy with Lucy?
Yes. Were you still scared?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
I can't imagine.
You know, it didn't really go away. Mm-hmm. It just never went away. We kept waiting for the shoe to drop. That's how we described it. And then when she was born, I kept waiting for something bad to happen. Mm-hmm. I would go in and just, I would watch her sleep to say, I have to be here when it happens. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 6 months after she was born to where I just started talking to the Lord about it. Because clearly I was out of control. I mean, I just was ruled by panic. I was ruled by fear, and I thought about it all the time. And for me, I mean, you know this, Dad. You joke about my recklessness growing up. I was in the ER all the time. I've been hurt, countless times. I didn't expect to be the worrier. I thought Laura would be the worrier. But even with Lincoln, when she got pregnant with Lincoln, I sold her car to put her in an expedition. I wanted to buy something bigger, and she wouldn't let me. I was so afraid. And really, it's daily prayer of saying, Lord, I'm afraid. You know I'm afraid. I want the fear to go away. I want to enjoy this. I want to be happy. Mm-hmm. You've got to help me overcome this.
Well, I have watched you, of course, from 6 weeks of age and lived with you every emotion in every source of pain. You know, a parent does that. I have never seen you go through quite what you did when Laura lost a baby. You were a wreck. And I'm not making fun. I mean, I am understanding what you were going through, but you really took that hard. Explain it.
I can't. You know, I just can't explain. I think that's one of the things people that have not experienced it, when they say things on accident, because they don't feel like, well, it's not the same as losing someone who's living. It's not the same. It's not. It's still as bad. You don't expect it. You know, you get pregnant. You know, when Laura was pregnant with Lincoln, it was like, oh my goodness, we're pregnant. I can't believe we're pregnant. This is crazy. You know, and there's excitement and fear. And then when she got pregnant again, it was like, oh, we're going to have another one. It's going to be fair. Can you believe it's going to be? We're going to have another baby. And then you go from just the highest of joy to total dismay.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And then it just compounds. There's no other way to put it. It compounds. You get pregnant again, and there's this terror that settles upon you, and then it happened again.
Can you imagine the mothers that have unexpected stillbirths?
Yeah.
Where they think everything's okay, and the cord gets wrapped around the neck or whatever it is, and my heart just goes
Absolutely.
Out to those women. Yeah.
Well, doctor, that's why this period is so shrouded in fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
I started yesterday's program by talking about that mix between the thrill of excitement and the anxiety, even if it's not as extreme as a stillbirth or a miscarriage. Along the way, every few weeks they're asking, do you want to be tested for this? You know, I remember with our last, they tested me for something and they said, oh, you came back positive that it could happen. And I had to push and push and push, and it was a 10th of a percentage chance. But just the very fact that I didn't even know that test had been done, and they came back and planted that seed mm-hmm. and then put me on bed rest.
You mentioned the internet yesterday.
You're just percolating with that anxiety.
And it feeds that. You type in anything, mm-hmm. pregnant, what you said, Aaron, hip pain, and you're going to get a list of things, not from credible people, some maybe from credible people, that can just keep that seed gets a little bit bigger and the plant starts to grow.
I am concerned, Aaron, at this moment for two other groups of people. The first is the single woman who is beginning to realize as she goes through her 30s and early 40s that she may not get married and may not experience the miracle of birth and having a child. And she's listening to us today and her heart is breaking. And I think about the married woman who is infertile and she's gone through all the tests and simply has not been able to conceive. You know, there's a lot of pain associated with this subject.
There's a lot of pain associated with it. In my personal family, we've had a lot of pain with pregnancy and childbirth and this whole situation. And I still feel pain about a lot of these situations, but I also have seen God's hand moving in such powerful ways. My sister, she has a 4-year-old, and then she started to try to have a second baby and could not get pregnant and decided to adopt a baby and went through years of failed adoptions, including losing a baby that she actually had in the hospital when the mom changed her mind. And through all that pain, she hit this point of pure despair where she just said, God does not want me to have any more kids. God does not want me to have a baby. And I remember sitting in a room with her and her saying, this hurts more than anything else, and I just have to let it go because I cannot walk forward. And the moment we were sitting in that room, 2 days later, we found out that there was a little boy that was born. He had been born with gastroschisis, all of his intestines out of his body. His birth mom had immediately just said, I can't have him. I can't take him. He had been airlifted to another hospital, and my sister drove up to that hospital, and she sat by his side. And this little boy is thriving now. He's beautiful, and he's wonderful. Mm. And I just thought, God let all that pain happen because he had a purpose and a plan. Interestingly, my sister got pregnant 2 months after that. That's the one she's due with any day. But you're talking about the pain from single women or women who are infertile and all those things. And I haven't experienced that, but I've seen it, and it is really painful. And I don't think there's any word I can say that will comfort someone in that place other than that God has a plan and God loves you and he cares for you and he knows your pain and he is going to use that pain for his kingdom and for his good.
My favorite phrase that I wrote, not sure if I got it from somebody else, I probably did, but in my book, When God Doesn't Make Sense, I drew the conclusion that you can trust him even if you can't track him.
That's good.
When you can't explain him, when you can't make the pieces fit, you can still say, nevertheless, Lord, I yield my life to you. And I lean not on my own understanding, but on yours. And that's the only answer.
It is the only answer. And I love that because even as my sister had all this pain through all this infertility, God was working in her heart and in her life and in these babies' lives that hadn't even been conceived yet.
Do people write you about these books? Do you get a lot of mail?
I do get a lot of mail about these books.
You're going to get some more.
Oh, good. I hope so. I try to write back to everyone. It may take me a little while, but I love hearing from moms. And I think the big thing people write is that there's a lot of camaraderie in being a mom and being a Christian mom, because while all of our experiences are unique, there's also this universal feeling, you know, that bowl on the top of your toddler's head. It's something a lot of other moms have experienced.
Tell us your blog.
ChristianMamasGuide.com.
And what does it consist of?
I try to write a lot like I did in my books, conversations I have with my kids. I really try to lean towards talking to my kids about faith and hope and love and the Bible and ways that, you know, you can just share Jesus with your kids in a very purposeful way. I also just talk about the things that happen, like the fact that my child spread dryer sheets all over my entire house when I turn my back for 30 seconds, because other moms understand that.
You bet they do.
Aaron, before we leave the whole second trimester thing, I just want to bring the dads back into the picture a little bit more here. And you've even said that this season might be a good time to go on almost like a second honeymoon or something, because you're hopefully feeling a little bit better. And then going into those last 3 months, you may not feel as strong, and then your life is going to change forever.
In fact, she also talks about a baby moon.
Yes.
You
yes,
want to explain that? Yeah.
Well, this all came about because I'm not afraid to confess. I was being a little selfish. I kind of assumed I'm carrying the baby. I'm doing all this.
Very easy
he
to do.
He can mm-hmm. rub my feet and go get me ice cream. Mm-hmm. And he actually told me, he said, this is my baby and I want to be part of it. And I want to be a dad and I want to be part of the pregnancy too. And I remember thinking, well, wait a second. I'm the one who has to gain 40 pounds. But then I realized that the truth is that he needs to be part of it. And he's this baby's father. And so we went away just for a couple of days. We didn't have money to go to Hawaii or something, but we just went to San Antonio and spent a couple of days talking about what we wanted to be as parents and how we wanted to raise these kids and what scriptures we wanted to be like our family centering points.
But even spiritually, you say that this is a good time for your husband to come in and pray for that baby together. You mentioned that's what your husband did, and that's when it really, really impacted you.
Mm-hmm. It did. And I almost didn't want to allow him to. I don't know why I separated him from the pregnancy, but when he did, I realized this is the man I'm going to be raising my kids with, and this is the man that's going to lead our family. And it was a powerful experience, but it also really helped me to like solidify where I was moving as a mother and how our family was going to be and how we were going to work together to raise these kids.
You suggest that he even takes a copy of that ultrasound picture to the office with him. I think that's a great idea.
Get a copy of the video.
Fun. Yeah.
But show it on Facebook or something.
Aaron, we're out of time again. We've only gotten through the second trimester. You're going to have to come back to talk about the third trimester.
Sounds fun.
It's been a pleasure having you here.
Yeah.
You're a Texan. I'm a Texan. You live in Austin, Texas. And you're loving being a mom, aren't you?
I do love being a mom.
Well, you're good at it.
Thanks.
Okay. Blessings to you. Give your husband our regards.
I will. Thank you.
And again, our thanks to author and speaker Aaron McPherson for joining us on these past 2 days. And do return tomorrow. We promise we will get to that third trimester. Let me just quickly recap some of the titles of Aaron's book so you will see a pattern here. The Christian Mama's Guide to Having a Baby. The Christian Mama's Guide to Baby's First Year, The Christian Mama's Guide to Parenting a Toddler, and finally, A Christian Mama's Guide to the First School Years. I guarantee you that you will find some insight and humor in all of these books.
Oh, you certainly will. Laura and I are going through The Toddler and The First School Years,
as
we have both right now.
Yes.
You can find out how to get a copy of any of these books at drjamesdobson.org, or when you give us a call, our number is 877-732-6825. And we also have a link to Aaron's blog on our website.
And while you're there at drjamesdobson.org, I would encourage you to check out some of the other resources we have available for you. Mm-hmm. We have information on different parenting topics ranging from discipline to the spiritual formation of your child. So you can find all of this and more under the Solid Answers tab there on our webpage.
Yeah, we all need a little help. It just feels overwhelming at times. Mm-hmm. I realized the other day that between Lincoln and Lucy, they were cutting 10 teeth.
And you were feeling every one of them.
Oh, my goodness. You know, our desire here at Family Talk is to impact and encourage families to follow Christ and to raise God-fearing, Christ-like children. And in today's society, it's really becoming a tough mm-hmm. endeavor. However, we are committed to standing firm in our mission.
And we would invite you to stand with us. Help make this daily broadcast possible. As we enter the summer months, our donation numbers dramatically drop. So anything you are able to provide would be greatly appreciated. And you can donate at drjamesdobson.org.
That's right. We have so many avenues available for you to donate. You can do so again at drjamesdobson.org via our smartphone app or through through Facebook, mm-hmm. or when you call our number one last time, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for joining us today, and do tune in next time. In fact, call up a girlfriend who's in that final trimester of pregnancy and invite her to tune in right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We'll see you then.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. For those of you who enjoy our radio program, Family Talk, I have some good news. When you're not able to hear Family Talk on your favorite Christian radio station, you can catch us by downloading the new Family Talk mobile app. You can not only use the app to hear our broadcast 24 hours a day, but you can view video commentaries or get answers to your family-related questions with our Solid Answers tool. They're all free and available on Android, iPhone, and iPad devices. I hope you'll visit your app marketplace to download it today. And thanks for listening to Family Talk.